sick. Watching my TV, checking out the news until my eyeballs fail to see. I mean to say that every day is just another rotten mess. And when it's gonna change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I'll go to prayer every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day.
Yeah, there's just no way to delay that trouble coming every day. Frank Zappa and the Mothers bringing us in there. Trouble every day, man. Holy shit, what a weekend. Drew Brees out for 6 to 8 weeks. Boy, you knew that was bad just by the look on Brees' face, didn't you? I mean, it's cool seeing Teddy Bridgewater get to play football, but man, watching Drew Brees get forced out via injury, obviously not fun. Big Ben, even worse. He's done for the entire season. And, you know, I think everybody's first thought is, oh, this sucks. We lose two good quarterbacks. But obviously, I think most of us who are fantasy veterans, our minds go very quickly to the collateral damage, of which there is a lot. You know, what's Alvin Kamara going to be now? We don't know. What's Michael Thomas going to be? There's some encouraging signs for Thomas once Bridgewater started playing. So maybe he, for all we know, I would say if there's one player in this whole mess that could get better, it might be Michael Thomas, because I think Bridgewater brings the downfield game into play for him a little bit more. But if via process the offense as a whole slows down, then we have a lowering tide, dropping all boats to some extent. Kamara is the one in that offense, clearly, that we're worried about. This isn't really a waiver wire discussion. Definitely going to hit this later in the week. I mean, I'm hopeful that Kamara retains a lot of his value, but we just don't know. I mean, the one thing that, you know, that at least from my perspective that I keep coming back to is that I believe in Bridgewater quite a bit. The thing is, we haven't seen Teddy play in a long time. He's got rust. We saw it with his sort of awareness in the pocket at times. I mean, by and large, he looked excellent. He was very cool. That one play where he got blown up, he was a little too cool. He didn't feel it or see it. It was coming from the right side, so he should have picked it up. Clearly, Teddy is going to get better with snaps. The question is Teddy himself going to be able to hold up the contact? He came back from that horrific injury. He's been technically ready to play for a while now, but we haven't really seen much of it. So maybe now we're going to get a chance to get a look at Teddy Bridgewater on a game-to-game basis against real competition. And we'll know more about his future soon. I guess that's one potential positive in all of this. Now, the good thing about Bridgewater is he's a good process player. He's smart. He's exceedingly good in terms of ball skills. He's really good at making the run play look like the pass and vice versa. So there's a lot of things that Bridgewater does well that are really going to work within this scheme. Obviously, you're talking about replacing a maestro of the grandest order here in Brees. I mean, the one thing Brees does as well as anybody is process and sort of orchestrate, if you will, the offense. You know, even if Bridgewater ends up being great, it's not going to happen in a finger snap. It's going to take a little time. So it's going to be interesting to watch what's going on in New Orleans. I'm excited to watch their games. From a fantasy perspective, we definitely have to be a little bit concerned about the guys in the backfield and then about Michael Thomas. Moving over to the Steelers side, things really are even worse, because I would say Roethlisberger is hugely important to that team having success. What he does is really hard to replace. They don't have a Bridgewater lying around. Now, Mason Rudolph, definitely a guy where I have some hopes for him. I liked a lot of what I saw from him in college. Maybe he comes in and does really well. I don't know. He's definitely more of a wild card than Bridgewater. And this definitely could have some effects on Juju. Juju is a guy who's going to be facing a lot of, you know, additional coverage. And that will make it different for a less experienced quarterback to get him off. So I think of all the people we're going to talk about, I think the one who probably takes the biggest hit is Juju. The Steelers players probably, not definitely, but probably more so than the Saints players are going to take a hit. The running backs, again, if the tide is lowering, it's going to hurt all the boats in the backfield. And we'll get into Samuels and Connor in a second. when I get to the individual players. But I think all of the peripheral receiving talent in Pittsburgh is something we really want to pay attention to now. Because if teams do go to take away Juju, it is going to open up some things in other places. And some of these guys are legitimately good football players, right? You know, James Washington, if they can figure out a way to get him off the line of scrimmage, this guy's a playmaker. Deontay Johnson, if they will give him the snaps, I think this guy's a playmaker. So this may be at some point in the not too distant future a situation where, with Big Ben not around to necessarily protect Moncrief, he felt they may have had a connection. I think it's now going to be much more of a meritocracy out there, and we may see Washington and Deontay rising up, and maybe we could eventually see a defined top three on this team. I'd like to see Juju, Deontay, and Washington myself. We'll see how it shakes out. But this is definitely a situation to watch in that regard. So Breeze, Big Ben, huge blows. Bridgewater and Mason Rudolph, the guys to pick up on a direct level. They will be the replacement guys. In New Orleans, we also have to keep an eye on Taysom Hill. Who knows what would happen if they put him in. Certainly that would be an exciting situation, if not a positive one. So hopefully you guys had a good week. I'll talk about this more when we get to the DFS pod on Saturday. But I had, you know, my week one was okay. I was a little bit in the red, but nothing too bad. I was well into the green last week, and I'm now up on the year, although not much, just a couple bucks. But it's nice to be up. It's nice to be not, you know, looking at my bankroll and wondering, do I need to add more money or something like that? So, you know, all good returns make us feel good. And I definitely have some spring in my step in terms of prep for next week. So that's a positive thing. While we're here, let's have a little fun and laugh at the Jets because they're a bunch of assholes on so many levels. And it starts with the defensive coordinator. I mean, what a total effing jackass that guy was, calling out Odell Beckham, being factually incorrect in the way he does it, and then making a reference to the Giants as if the Giants' decision making is all we really need on the subject. What a total idiot. And he got burned in predictable fashion. You know, I honestly don't know why that guy, I mean, I'm not even going to refer to him by name. I'm just going to call him asshole. I don't know why he's the defensive coordinator of the Jets. I don't know who felt compelled to bring this jackass in, but I can't wait until he's gone. And you know what? I don't even care if he has some success this year. Yeah, he's a competent coordinator. He's got aggressive tendencies. When he gets it going well, good things can happen. He's just a dick. I don't want him on my team. And I think he's really overrated, to be honest, as far as being a defensive coordinator. So F that guy. And F the Jets. What a bunch of idiots. Sorry, listen, and everybody knows I'm a Jet fan. I mean, I root for these idiots. But you know what? I've said this a million times. They don't get to hurt me anymore. You know, I'm just sort of, I look at them like I'm the way you look at your child when they disappoint you. Just sort of like shaking your head. I still love them, but I'm just shaking my head. And with the Jets, I don't have to stick with them the way I have to stick with my kids. So I can turn the game off. I can switch channels. I can pay attention to my fantasy team, but man, what a shit show these guys are. Anyway, done with that. So let's talk a couple. There are some folks who have graduated. We talked about them last week. They're now in the upper ownership area. Guys like Hollywood, John Ross, John Brown, DeSean Jackson, Terrell Williams, Malcolm Brown, Adrian Peterson. You know, those guys, at this point, if you've got access to them, they're easy button ads. Sort of like Rashad Penny, Christian Kirk. I had a question on folks. If Christian Kirk's on your waiver wire, go get him, but he shouldn't be. Matt Breida had a question on him. Obviously, go pick him up if you can, but he should not be available. Had a question on the Pats D. Well, they're not going to be playing the Dolphins every week, which is too bad, but they're still excellent. Should not be unowned in any leagues, including 10-team leagues. They're a top five fantasy defense, I think. Had a question on David Montgomery. Apparently, he was dropped in a league. Go get him immediately. And, you know, listen, on stuff like this, I'm not going to waste a lot of time at the head of the podcast talking about guys who shouldn't be on the waiver wire. Anybody who's on the waiver wire is at 50 or below in terms of Yahoo ownership rates. I think probably a better way to do this, if you guys see a guy in your waiver wire and you're like, you know, should I go get that guy? He seems like a good guy. Well, hit me on Twitter, man. I'll tell you. Just shoot me a quick tweet. I'm at Rotobon for those who don't know. And generally within that day, I should get back to you. If I don't, it means it got buried in my mentions. And feel free, if you don't hear from me within a couple hours, hit me back. Generally speaking, I get to everything. But, you know, if I'm lagging behind, it's okay for you to hit me twice. I won't be offended. Now, hitting me every 5 minutes is different, but we all know that. Okay, so again, for heavily owned players, they're probably not going to be on the wire. So again, feel free to hit me on Twitter. Lots of just nasty injuries out there. Connor looks like he's going to be okay. Both of the backs in KC are sort of 50-50 shots, which is why we're going to be talking about Darwin Thompson. DeSean Jackson and Jeffrey also look like 50-50 shots, which is why we'll be talking about Arthego Whiteside. We'll also talk about Mr. Aguilar. Michael Gallup is going to be out for 2 to 4 weeks. We'll talk about Dallas's next up guys. Dallas Goedert looks like he's going to be out for a while. That doesn't create any situation. It just sort of underscores the value of one Zachary Ertz. I may have mentioned Crowder as far as guys who are no longer on the wire. He's owned too much, but he's probably going to get dropped this week coming off just a bad game. Just folks, the Jets had a completely forgettable experience on Monday. It's not really representative of what that offense is going to be, particularly once they actually get their quarterback back. So I think Crowder's actually going to be a really nice PPR asset. I would hang on to him in full PPR leagues. Okay, let's get into these one position group at a time. And again, I'm going to try to get you guys out of here in 30 minutes. I wanted to sort of hold this podcast and record it a little bit later once I actually have the entire wire done. Problem is, I'm just taking advantage. The crew working across street from my house is on a lunch break right now. I've got like another 25 minutes to get this in before they start moving the crane and backhoe, at which point you guys will not enjoy what we're hearing. So let's get into these quarterbacks. Okay, so, you know, I don't know how many of you actually lost a starter here. I didn't have Breeze or Roethlisberger as my number one on any of my teams. Hopefully these are QB2s for most of you. But you know what? It's really not a big deal. You know, obviously you're going to take a hit, but we got plenty of quarterbacks out there who can help you. Josh Allen's at the top of my board. Again, he's there for upside purposes. We're not sure how consistent he's going to be. But if you just go back really to when he came back from that injury last year, he's been a good, solid, startable quarterback almost every week. So, you know, the bad games for him are starting to become the exception. Even when he plays poorly, he finds a way to become fantasy relevant with his feet. And they've really improved, I would say, the weapons around him, along with the offense as a whole. He's got some veteran running backs, which I think is a help. But he's also got some dynamic weapons around him, plus Cole Beasley, who I think was an excellent add. I talked about it last week. We'll talk about it again later. So Allen, I think, is an easy call as the best quarterback who's out there. He's available in a lot of leagues. I like adding him as a QB2 who could end up being my QB1. So that one's easy. Jimmy Garoppolo's next up. I'm pretty impressed with what I've seen. The offense is working. The scheme is clicking. The ground game is going. So it's going to be tough for teams to lean in to stop Garoppolo. He is accurate. He's throwing the ball on time. I'm pretty excited about what I'm seeing with him. Now, as far as, you know, the offense as a whole, which receivers we want to target, all that kind of thing, that's a little bit tougher to figure out. They're rotating guys. Pettis' snaps went up last week. So this is a receiving core in motion, but the quarterback, I think, is a stable commodity. And, you know, the schedule is relatively good. So, you know, to me, Garoppolo is a blinking green add. Andy Dalton is more interesting. Dalton, you know, at 1 minute he looks lost out there. He's throwing balls into double coverage. He's making some really bad choices. But when he's making good choices, this new system is getting him open receivers. And if Dalton can just get with the scheme a little bit more, find the open man, they're out there. You know, unlike years past where a lot of the time we're talking about covered Bengals all over the field, particularly when A.J. Green was dinged up. They're out there playing without Green, and they're getting guys open. So this bodes well, and I'm really excited about what might happen when Green gets back. So to me, Dalton is a player to own. Hopefully he continues to play well and holds the job. You know, obviously, they do have the kid behind him Finley, who you never know what might happen there. But for now, Dalton's the guy. He's making the money. Unless he plays his way out of the job, I don't think he's going to lose it. And again, you know, it's what you want to do is go through your starters, buys, and see if it lines up well with Dalton's matchups. He's got some good ones and some tough ones. It's really, for me, it's about looking at the schedule with him. Same kind of thing with Matt Stafford. I think in some weeks when we can anticipate better pace, his weapons make him an interesting play. He's available in a lot of leagues. He's not a guy I would want to roll with as my starter, but certainly as a stable backup commodity, I like him. Jacoby Brissett, still pretty low owned. I thought he looked good again last week. He's still holding the football too long. That is the bugaboo with Brissett. It's a vision thing. It's a processing thing. If they can speed his clock up without just getting him to force the ball out. I mean, we need him in some situations to just get it out. But in other situations, he needs to find the play sooner. So they need to speed up, not necessarily his release, but his processing. If that happens, if the game can slow down for Brissett a little bit, I'd see really good things for this kid. He's big, he's got a strong arm, he's got some confidence to him, but he does need to see it a little bit cleaner and a little bit quicker. Now, the truth of the matter is we've seen a lot of guys not make it because of that. So, you know, Brissett, I think, is a 50-50 thing, whether he's going to put it all together or not. But I think there's a lot of potential for him in this scheme this year, particularly when we have good matchups. Teddy Bridgewater, we spoke about him earlier. I think Bridgewater's probably going to do okay if he can take the hits. That's really going to be the big question with him. He got lit up once last week and he came back strong. Getting lit up was a bad sign. Coming back strong was a good one. So we'll have to see how this plays out. You're looking at a 6 to 8 week eight week window for Bridgewater here, which gives him some legit value. In deeper leagues, he might be the only guy out there available for you, so go after him and get him. I think he's probably going to play pretty well, you know, for what it's worth. Will he be worth as much as Breeze? I'd say that's doubtful, but, you know, still, the thing about Teddy Bridgewater is that he's good at the game. What we saw the other night was the team sort of falling apart around him. Now, some of that will be different guy, different cadence. We expect when there's a quarterback switch, particularly when you're going from a guy who's never really missed time, there will be some issues. But it was pretty bad. And I think hopefully that stuff will be cleaned up next week and we'll get a better look. But definitely I think adding Bridgewater has some merit, as does adding Marcus Mariota, who has looked mediocre. In terms of, you know, it's not like he's been firing balls into tight windows, but he has found the play for the most part, and he's shown an inclination to run. So I think in positive matchups, Mariota can help you. Again, check with your starters bye week, and you may have a fit. Gardner Minshew, haven't watched his second game yet. It appears he played rather well again. And then the next guy I think I will bump up above Minshew, Daniel Jones, who should be the new quarterback of the Giants. He's been announced as the week 3 starter. If he doesn't crater, he's probably got this gig. And look, here's the thing about Jones. He's got some talent to work with, particularly once Golden Tate is back in a few weeks. And he is mobile. And I think this might be the reason why the Giants are doing the right thing. If Jones is ready to process the game, his mobility will help them, create plays in some new ways. You've got Barkley teams. You know, you can swing Barkley one way, roll the quarterback another, create some open field if your first option isn't there. There are some new ways they can design plays. And, you know, it's the Giants. They don't always embrace every possibility. So we'll have to see how this goes. But there's some potential here. Again, Jones is mobile, and he has an inclination to run if you watched his college film. Last guy we'll talk about as far as pickups go. Two more. Case Keenum, I think, is a right now guy you can throw in there. Although I don't know how long he's going to last. Again, he left another deep ball on the table last week. He threw it on the wrong side of McLaurin. If he'd thrown the ball out towards the middle of the field, really good chance McLaurin gets a long gainer on the play. But Mason Rudolph is the other guy I want to talk about. I like him. He's got a gunslinger's mentality in some ways. He can definitely throw a nice deep ball. He's got a lot of experience playing with James Washington from the college days. So I think Rudolph in deeper leagues is definitely a guy you can add for depth. All right, let's take a look at these running backs. Hopefully we can do about 10 minutes on the running backs, 10 minutes on the receivers, real quick on the tight ends, and we'll get you out of here. Now, with these running backs, you know, it's a lot like last week, but worse, where we're not sure which one we want to take first. A lot of it's going to depend on what it is you need, what kind of rosters you have, what your situation is. Now, Jalen Samuels is at the top of my board just because I think he's the one guy out there you just have to make sure you get, particularly if you are a Connor team, okay? Jalen Samuels is a guy, if he gets the full gig, he's going to hit all over the place. He'll be a goal line back. He'll catch passes. He'll run the ball. He can do everything. So he needs to be owned. And let's get into this for a second, okay? I mentioned last week about the Lord Reeves pod and how he talked about the reasons not to handcuff. And when I'm talking about Jalen Samuels here, I'm not just simply talking to those of you who own Connor. Now, I think handcuffing sometimes does make sense, and Samuels for Connor owners is a definite case where I like it. But Jalen Samuels is an excellent acquisition whether you have Connor or not, because if Connor goes down and you don't own him and you do own Samuels, you just picked yourself like a mid-second round pickup for the extent of time that he's going to be the starter. So, you know, Samuels to me is a guy who needs to be owned in all leagues except for the very tiniest of leagues where it's just not possible, where you only have a couple bench spots after your starters. Unless you're in one of those, Samuels should be owned, period. And he should be owned over everybody else coming up on this board. Some of these guys are close. Madison, for example, is close. You have to sort of understand who the guys are who have that tremendous appeal if they get, put in there. Samuels has got that. Now, Raheem Mostert's next on the list. You know, the odds that Mostert is going to have, like, value for the rest of the year, it's not that good. Tevin Coleman will come back. Things are going to happen. Mostert himself has not been a guy who has stayed healthy. And if you look at his running style, he takes a lot of shots on the hips. I'm a little bit concerned about him lasting, but he's big, he's fast, he fits the scheme, he sees things in their scheme really well. He's going to get plenty of touches running behind Breida. So to me, Mostert, if you're looking for a guy who you can just put in your lineup right now, you know, maybe you are a Coleman owner, I don't know, but, you know, Mostert's a guy you can flex him and get points, you can put him in your RB2 spot and get points. So he's got immediate value, and maybe immediacy is your concern. Maybe you're 2-0 and you got a hole, and you can't afford to take Jalen Samuels. Thank you very much, Pete. You don't need to stash players right now. You need to fix your lineup. I understand that. So for some people, you may have to just take the player who's going to hit for you this week. I get it. And Mostert's a guy who should give you some value this week. Darwin Thompson may have more value this week than Mostert, but we don't know. We don't know if Damian Williams is going to be able to play. We don't know if LeSean McCoy is going to be able to play. To me, Darwin Thompson should be owned in all leagues, even though he's a third guy and not a second guy. That offense is so explosive. McCoy is an old back. He could easily get dinged. Damian Williams has no track record of durability in terms of handling a heavy workload. So, you know, for me, I've got Thompson pretty much in any league where he was available. Usually he's backing up Damian. But to me, he's just a hugely valuable player. And if you're looking for a guy who could help you this week, he could help you. We need one of the other backs not to play. If you look at the other two guys as being 50-50, then there's certainly a better than 50-50 chance that Thompson's going to be worth something this week. Not to mention, he should have season-long value as, you know, a superior anti-fragility asset. Alexander Mattison, same thing. You can put Mattison up at the top if you want. These guys, again, the thing that separates them for who you want to take are your own personal logistics. For me, Mattison is an incredible investment, stash, anti-fragility play, but he's also an outstanding handcuff. So if I have Cook, I'm selling out to get Mattison. Otherwise, he's the guy I'm targeting. And quite honestly, I've got Mattison on most of my rosters, even the ones where I don't have Cook. Carlos Hyde, more touches this week than last week. While we're here, let me just make sure I got this. I want to say he had 20 touches. I'm not 100% on that. Let me just pull up the data. Yeah, Carlos Hyde went from 25 snaps to 40. That's significant. Up to 61% of the snaps. That's very significant. He went from 10 rushes to 20. Obviously, very significant. Now, he's only been targeted once, and that was in week one. We know that's not going to be happening. He is very much a standard league kind of talent. I also think Duke Johnson is going to catch up personally, even though the roles were switched. It was 60 for Duke week one, 60 for Hyde week two. So I don't know if this is situational or if this is the way they're going to go. I do know that I think Duke Johnson's the better fantasy player, and that's the guy I would prefer to have rostered long term. But if you're looking for a guy to carry the ball this week, Carlos Hyde can help you. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Now, Chris Thompson, sort of the anti-Hyde. He's a PPR pickup. Not going to help you very much in standard leagues because he's not a touchdown guy, and he's not a rushing guy. But he is going to give you targets, which will turn into receptions. If you look at Thompson over the first 2 weeks, you're looking at 10 targets and then 8. So 18 over two games, not less than 8 yet. Receptions 7 and then 5. That's 12 receptions in two games, not bad. This is a guy who can help you in PPR leagues. Justice Hill is a guy I would actually prioritize higher than where I have him ranked because he has got so much upside in an offense that is smoking hot. He hasn't gotten a lot of juice in the first 2 weeks. I do think that'll change. And again, once this guy settles in, I think he could be a big play guy on a lot of weeks. I really believe that. Now, over to the Bucs backfield. Ronald Jones is a guy I sort of leaned in on last week. And then, of course, Arians leans away from him. Now, we talked that Arians is often full of crap. And in this case, he wasn't. In this case, you know, then everybody was trying to anoint Ronald Jones. He sort of went out of his way to go the other way. And then he did it, once the whistle blew. So Barber got most of the carries, didn't really do much in terms of yard per carry, but he looked half decent out there as he usually does, and he pulled off a touchdown. If you're starting a Bucs back right now, it should be Barber. If I could only own one Bucs back, it's probably still Jones as a stash. I still think he's got tons of ceiling, but we're going to have to wait for it. Ito Smith, another guy we probably have to wait for. His snap total went down a little bit. His usage didn't change a whole lot, though. Meanwhile, Devontae Freeman, once again, didn't do a whole hell of a lot. If they decide to go another way, it'll be Smith. If something happens to Freeman, it'll be Smith. He's an excellent back to own because he's got a lot of upside scenarios, and it's not like Freeman is the picture of health. Frank Gore has looked pretty good, but he's not going to have much value unless Singletary is out. That said, Singletary clearly did something to his hammy at the end of that game, about 5-10 minutes to go in the game. He didn't come back in. So it would not surprise me if we find out that Singletary's questionable or worse this week. So Gore's a guy to pick up if Singletary is a person you're leaning on or if you're just looking for a short-term boost. The next guy on the list is Bryce Love. Now, Love can't come back till week 7, but I think if you look at the way Washington's trending, Love could end up doing quite a bit. Now, the one factor we have here is Geis. Geis could be back a couple weeks after Love, but Love is, you know, really expected to be back at his time, where Geis, you're talking about a meniscus thing. Wouldn't surprise me if we didn't see Geis again. It also wouldn't surprise me when we do see him, he doesn't look all that great. Justin Jackson, we know about him. He's a handcuff. Josh Jacobs has a groin issue, so both of the backups there are potential adds, Rashard and Washington. That's probably a situation to sort of let it play out during the week and then maybe go after one of those guys if Jacobs isn't going to play. Dare Ogunbowale saw his role dip a little bit, but he's still a guy to look at in full PPR formats, big ones. Jeff Wilson got a handful of touches, but they were goal line touches, a lot of them, and it really looked like that he could be the goal line back as things currently stand. So in deep non-PPR leagues, he's definitely a guy to look at adding. And then the last guy I've got on the list right now, there's probably going to be a couple more guys on this list, but Mark Walton is just a guy I like from a talent perspective, from a receiving perspective. If they follow through with this dealing Kenyon Drake thing, Walton could end up being the back to own on this team because Kalen Ballage hasn't looked that great to me. And Walton is a guy who could catch 5-6 balls a week in the right circumstances. So just a guy to keep your eye on. That's speculative, I would say, for the most part. Now let's get into some receivers. I will do my best to keep this quick on the receivers, but this is actually probably the, I would say, probably the most important group this week in terms of sort of separating these guys. Again, it's not easy to decide which one to go after. A lot of it's going to depend on your situation. I've got DK Metcalf at the top just because, look, you've got the high upside talent. You've got Russell Wilson. He's starting. He's had a good week one, a good week two. He's available in about half of leagues. Look, if DK Metcalf is out there, right now he looks like a guy you can just take and use as your third receiver in almost any format. So he's an easy add. Now, does he have the upside of Paris Campbell? I don't think he does. Does he have the upside of Deebo Samuel? I don't know if he does. Because these guys could end up being sort of volume plays. Paris Campbell's a guy, they may scheme touches for him a lot, 2-3 weeks from now once he's fully up to speed. You know, he could turn into sort of a co-number one on that team. Now, Metcalf can do that too, but we know the Seahawks, there are weeks where they're going to throw like 18 times. So that's the one issue with Metcalf, that and his propensity to get hurt. So Metcalf to me is the easy one, along with McLaurin, okay? Who, I wasn't even going to list McLaurin, but they're both right about 50% ownership. They're both starting. They're both producing right now. So they're sort of the easy guys to add. If you can get one of them, it's nice, it's easy, it's clean. Now, Paris Campbell, same kind of thing as last week, okay? He's the guy I want the most of everybody who's out there. But I also know that people don't see it that way. Most experts don't see it that way, and most players don't. So if, now again, I own Campbell now everywhere, except for the leagues where I got beaten to him at the draft. So I'm not in a position where I have to go bidding on Paris Campbell. If I was, I would do the same thing as last week. I would prioritize him as a secondary add if I've got two cuts, and if not, depending on my roster, I might make him my priority, but I'm not going to go throw the same money at him that I would throw at McLaurin and Metcalf because I shouldn't have to. Now, you can put Samuel over Campbell as well. It makes sense to me to do that because when I watch the 49ers, they're going out of their way to involve Samuel in almost every play where he's on the field. If he's not the guy who's getting the handoff or the bullet sweep, or the toss or whatever, he's part of the deception on the play. So I saw them fake the reverse handoff to Samuel and then go to a different player on a screen. I saw them fake to Samuel and then hit him on a screen. So they're really doing a lot of different things with him. He looks pretty good out there. He's made some mistakes. He had a fumble week one. But he's now up to 10 targets in the season, and this guy is a playmaker. So to me, Deebo Samuel, if what we're seeing continues, I think it's really just a factor of time before they've got him in there as almost a full-time player. Now, there is some issue there. Pettis' snaps were coming up, and Goodwin is playing a lot of snaps as well. Goodwin is also an excellent add, for as long as he stays healthy. His touchdown was basically a scheme touchdown, by the way. He didn't run a deep route. They actually ran him a delay route through the line of scrimmage, just snuck him the ball. Nobody picked him up, and he basically just jogged for a touchdown. So really, I think any of the top three 49er receivers are similar in value, whether it's Pettis or Samuel or Goodwin. But it's Samuel and Goodwin who are available. And if I had my druthers, I think I'll take Samuel because I think he's the more durable long-term weapon. I think you can make an argument that Samuel's the most valuable guy in my column this week. It's really a matter of, where you're at. I mean, you can't count on Deebo Samuel as a starter this week. That's why we've got Metcalf ahead of him. The thing about Samuel is if he clicks, I mean, he's got a lot of upside. He could be like a second receiver in a month for all we know. So I really like the idea of rostering him. Now let's get to these Chiefs guys. DeMarcus Robinson, who went off. I mentioned him as a target for deep leaguers last week. I guess I should have mentioned him as the best target for everybody since he went nuts. I have not had the pleasure of watching that game yet. I'm going to get to it after I record this podcast. So I may have an update for the Chiefs guys later on because I'll definitely watch that game this afternoon. Hardman, I heard, had some drops, but obviously he also was targeted, made some big plays. So clearly Robinson and Hardman, I think, in all leagues, while Tyreek Hill is out, you can stick these guys in as flexes or third receivers. So, you know, they don't have the long-term viability that some of these guys have. But since Hill can be out like another month or more, they definitely have some value. It's up to you how you want to play this. But these guys continuing to be guys with a lot of upside week to week, that's going to continue. And the matchup is not particularly important. Cole Beasley. Once again, I was impressed with him. Now, he had one big play that sort of made his day look good. I don't know how many big plays he's going to have, but it's clear that he is going to be targeted frequently on this team. The same goes for Trey Quinn with Washington. Now, he doesn't have the good quarterback connection that Beasley has, but he is going to be working in the middle of the field, and he is right now the most stable and healthy thing they have going in the middle of the field. So I like Trey Quinn plenty in 12 teams and above full PPR scoring. James Washington is sort of a gut play this week. We're not real excited about what we've seen from him so far, but at the same time, this guy has a serious connection with his college quarterback, Mason Rudolph. It would be nice if Washington had some production. Now, he did get a couple more snaps second week. Switzer's snaps went down to 23%. James Washington went from 52 to 60. Deontay Johnson went from 36 to 47. So Deontay's almost up to 50% now. To me, Washington and Deontay are the guys to add on this team. Moncrief going down to 32% in the game. Roethlisberger got hurt. Does not surprise me. He had another bad play, led to a turnover. I think Moncrief is fading. I think the time to get these other two guys is now. This is a team that's going to be in more passing scripts. So to me, Washington is, you know, maybe the first guy to add for immediate results. But personally, I'm on Deontay Johnson maybe just as much. If either one of those guys can be had, I would be pretty excited. Now, moving down the list, Nelson Agholor and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside are guys who you might want to add this week. Now, we don't know what the availability of Alshon and D-Jax is going to be. That's going to have a lot to do with whether we want to play these guys week one. So they're a little bit further down the list. Conceivably, they're guys maybe you want to wait a day or two, see if they're actually guys who are going to start this week. But they are names to know. Both of them are good, solid football players. And if they're getting targeted by Wentz in this offense, they would have wide receiver three value or at least flex appeal. DJ Shark and Conley both looked good again. Both of them, I think, are good flex adds. I think they're going to hold off Marquise Lee personally because they're both playing that well. DJ Shark, I mean, I got to give the guy credit. He, you know, listen, we knew he could make hand catches when he's forced to. And if you watch last week's game, one of the plays I saw, he clearly is forced to go to his hands. That's not something that I have a problem with. He has problems when he has a choice, when it's, do I want to body catch it or do I want to try out the hands? He gets shaky in those situations. Lots of players who have shaky hands are fine if you lay them out. Will Fuller will make a big-time catch if you make him lay out. Same thing for John Ross. Same thing even for Dante Moncrief. A lot of these guys who have hand fears, the fear doesn't exist if you make it a clear-cut choice. It's a problem when it's like, well, what do I want to do? Because they don't have confidence. Confidence goes out the window when you're forced into doing something. You know, like you don't think about life and limb when you're in a life and death situation. You know, your instincts take over. Same kind of thing happens with receivers. You throw them a ball that's well above their center line, they're going to go up and use the hands without thinking about it. And a lot of the time, they'll be just fine. So both Shark and Conley, I think, are solid flex adds, maybe even third receivers in deeper leagues. If they're out there, I think they're viable to go after. The Cowboy receivers. Now, we've lost Gallup for 2 to 4 weeks. Gallup was playing really, really well. You can make an argument he was playing better than Cooper. Now, Devin Smith's probably going to get the snaps on the outside. He had a touchdown last week. Devin Smith's a guy I really like going all the way back to Ohio State. If that knee is 100%, he can come in for Gallup, and they won't miss much. So Devin Smith in deep leagues, if you're looking to get a guy that you can actually play this week, he could be something. Randall Cobb may get more snaps and more looks. He's been looking okay. So he's another one to consider. For short-term gains, though, I think I'm on Smith. Now, let's dump down to these Dolphins receivers, Parker and Williams. Both of them are looking okay, although Williams definitely looked better last week. Parker played more, but he was like 0 for 7 on his targets. Now, look, going forward for these guys, things are going to change. They're not going to have to play the Patriots every single week. Obviously, that helps. In fact, let me just pull up Miami's schedule here for a second, because I think for these particular players, knowing who they're going to play, will help quite a bit in terms of whether we want to target them or not. Miami gets Dallas this week, not great. Chargers next week, not great. Then they're on the bye. They do come out of that with Washington. So week 6 could be a good week for them. The Jets week 9 could be a good week for them. But by and large, the schedule is not great for what it's worth. Deion Kane is the next guy on the list. I thought he looked really good. He's running good routes. He did make one gas-headed play, but I think in general, he's a guy who looks like the playing time is going to continue. The problem for Kane is that he runs a lot of outs outside the numbers and deeper routes, the routes that Brissett is not throwing as well at this point. He's also not real gifted in terms of working his way back to the quarterback, and Brissett is having a little bit of issue dropping his eyes at times. So Kane, to me, not a bad ad in deeper leagues, but again, I like Paris Campbell more for the way I think this offense is going to evolve. So that's going to do it for the receivers. Let's just do a couple minutes on tight ends. But back to Paris Campbell for a second. We saw the touchdown. The touchdown was a pure speed play. He gets there. He gets the guy isolated. Once he gets the guy in his hip, he takes off across the end zone. He just becomes more and more open. He's pulling away as the ball is in flight. Obviously, they know what the strengths are with this player. They had that thing set up. He only played 18 snaps. I don't know how quickly that's going to change. I do think you'll see him get up into the 25-30 area this week, and eventually he'll get up close to full time. So to me, this guy is a wonderful stash play, huge talent. What you're seeing with McLaurin, you can see all of that and more with Paris Campbell. We just need to get him on the field. Okay, let's just dump down here. We're going to do a couple minutes on tight ends, and then we're going to get you guys out of here. Okay, so tight ends. And you can hear the construction starting in the background. My apologies. We'll get this done quick. We'll get you out of here. At the top of my list, you may not see this guy in other places. Then again, you may. I don't know. But Chris Herndon, to me, is blinking green in terms of a tight end that you can add in a lot of places who might be a just absolute lock starter once he gets on the field week 6. Now, things really time well for Herndon, right? Because that's right about when we should be getting Darnold back. So the Jets should be in better shape then. The Jets' schedule also lightens up over the second half of the season. The Jets have already lost some players. They're going to need Chris Herndon. And here's the thing. Chris Herndon is going to run a lot of those inside, deeper routes. Darnold likes throwing those routes, and he has a lot of trust in this player. One thing we saw last year with Chris Herndon is that Darnold is willing to give him 50-50 balls. That's big. I mean, that's really big when you think about it. It's all about targets, and we're talking about money, 20-yard downfield targets. He's also a red zone guy. So Herndon, to me, is absolutely a guy to pick up and stash. He could be a guy who really helps us, especially if tight end is a position of weakness. Will Dissly, looking good. He's catching touchdowns. He did it last year. He's already doing it this year. Probably should have been a little bit more on him, but I wanted to see that the knee was in good shape. Clearly it is. So Will Dissly is a now player, and he gives you tight end, touchdown ability on an every week basis. Noah Fant is getting the run, so he's on the field. Obviously, that's really important when we're talking about fantasy value, particularly for a tight end. Now, the thing with Fant, if we look at his playing time, 81% first week, 60%, 66% second week, but he played more snaps. So they probably have X number of things locked in for him right now. Hoyerman will be the guy who comes in, and then Fumagalli is sort of the third tight end. But if you look at what Fant has done, the targets, they've been there. And they're, 4 targets each week. He got 4 receptions last week. You know what? For a rookie tight end, 54 snaps, 4 targets, 4 receptions, 33 yards in his second game, That's pretty good. And we're talking about a team that really is looking to develop things. So I think Fant is going to be a big factor for them this year. I think they want to get him up to speed. So the statistics will probably be sort of north of where he's at as a football player. And then the last thing that we like about Noah Fant, however you pronounce it, is that he's really an offense-first player. So to me, he's the next guy on the list to go after, and he hopefully will have season-long appeal. Hayden Hurst didn't do much, but he was targeted in the red zone. He caught it. He has a touchdown now. And the thing that we've been talking about when it comes to Hayden Hurst is that he plays a lot because he's a good all-around football player. You know, as good as Mark Andrews was, he's still only playing about 50% of the snaps. Now, last week, Hurst was around that 50% area as well. He was first week. All of their tight ends are around that 50% area. So Andrews clearly is the one with the fantasy value. They basically use him as a receiver with a tight end distinction. But it's important to keep an eye on Hurst. If he can continue to stay healthy, remember last year he got sabotaged because he was dinged up all year. But if he can continue to stay healthy and they can continue to work these little package plays for him, eventually they'll have enough of him in where he can probably be a real threat to score every week. So I like him as a guy to roster, sort of as a stash in deeper leagues. Vernon Davis is a guy to keep an eye on. He can get another start this week if Reed doesn't play. And then there's Jason Witten, who, as I say, you know, process touchdowns. This is a guy who is pretty much washed, but this offense is so good. When they get down inside the five, they can basically give Witten a touchdown anytime they want. I think he's going to end up with 5, 6, 7 on the year, even though he doesn't play all that well. So he gives you a puncher's chance at the position. He has some value. Okay, that's going to do it for the tight ends. That's going to do it for the waiver wire pod. Sorry it went long, but you know what? Early in the year, you know, just I like to hit as many things as we can. I'd rather err on the side of too much. This podcast will get tighter and tighter as the season rolls along. I know that really in the second half last year, it was like a 25, 30-minute podcast every week. Okay, so going forward this week, I'm working on a buy-low podcast. That'll be a quick 15 to 20 minute podcast tomorrow morning. Then we're going to have lineup rankings going up on Thursday. I'll be doing a WEEI podcast on Friday with Jim Hackett. That goes up Friday night. On Saturday, and obviously all day Friday, I'm doing film, getting ready for the DFS pod, which will be going on Saturday this week with the rankings update as well and my DFS starts article over at EEI. And then on Sunday, we've got the Fantasy Football Hour. If you don't like to wake up to listen to it live, they've been getting the recorded version up pretty quick. So that should be up on WEEI.com by like 10 a.m. So once again, I'd like to thank you for listening to the Rotobond Podcast. We're going to take off now, but I will see you all tomorrow morning with a little buy low pod. See you then.